Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Sanlam Life Insurance Limited 10-month operational update. All participants are currently in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Also note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Paul Hanratty. Please go ahead, sir.
Chris, thanks a lot. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us on this conference call. I'm joined today by Finance Director Abigail Makuba, our Chief Actuary and Chief Risk Officer Lotz Mashlangeni, and the Head of Investor Relations Grant Davids. Sanlam released our operational update for the 10-month period to 31 October 2021 earlier this afternoon. I'd like to make a few comments before we proceed to questions. While 2021 continues to be a very challenging year, I'm absolutely delighted that the Sanlam Group has made excellent progress both operationally and strategically. Our operational results are outstanding, and I believe that our results demonstrate that customers value having Sanlam as a trusted partner more than ever before. In every business line and customer segment, we've continued to strengthen our market position during 2021. From a strategic perspective, the group made significant progress since we announced our interim results in September. The development of Sanlam Investments as South Africa's leading black-owned asset manager, and the proposed merger with Absa Investment Managers to create a scaled investment platform offering diverse asset classes, will significantly improve our market position. Strong client cash flows during the period underline the progress in the development of the group's investment platform. The breadth of the offering, the integration of ESG principles into all of our investment processes, and the ownership credentials of the business have combined to elevate our investment platform's prominence over the year. We've launched a new set of health insurance offerings in partnership with AfroCentric to provide a more holistic product offering to our clients and to fulfill a market need for affordable health insurance. The proposed transactions with Alexander Forbes that we announced the other day will enable the group to focus on providing umbrella pension fund solutions to the market and a full range of investment and insurance products to the corporate benefits market. This focus will further strengthen the group's competitive position in the corporate benefits market over time. And as our operational results indicate, the Sanlam Group's performance in this market is very strong and improving. We divested from our UK operations outside of asset management, informed by our capital allocation framework and strategic intent to develop the leading African insurance and asset management group. We also took steps to further optimize the Pan-African portfolio through strengthening our position in key markets and exiting subscale operations. Our Pan-African general insurance portfolio recorded a net insurance margin of 19.5%, driven by a higher return on insurance funds and a net underwriting margin within our target range. Our Pan-African life portfolio recorded a strong performance. New business volumes were up by 22%, and the value of new covered business by 87% in constant currency. This growth and strong performance as we integrate the various African operations into the Sanlam Group is very pleasing and supports our long-term ambitions for the continent. From an operational perspective, the performance of our business in attracting new customers and deepening relationships with existing customers was outstanding. We're particularly pleased with the new business volumes in the life insurance and asset management product lines. Our strong platform and product offering meant that we were well positioned to meet client needs in this regard. New business volumes across all product lines were 17% higher than 2020 and 46% higher than 2019. Obviously, asset management and life insurance numbers were much higher than that. The value of new business covered was up by 55% on 2020 and was 23% higher than 2019. The new business margin of 2.65% was higher than 2020 and only very slightly below 2019. Net fund flows were an incredible 61.4 billion. 21% higher than 2020 and 41% higher than 2019. The COVID-19 pandemic continues to impact our business's profitability, and return on group equity value. Significant excess mortality claims were recorded in our South African and emerging markets operations. The strength of our balance sheet, however, has enabled us to mitigate much of the impact of this on the earnings of our South African operations. Sanlam Life and Savings paid gross mortality claims of more than 14 billion in the first 10 months of 2021. This was 88% higher than the same period in 2020, significantly due to the impact of the third wave of COVID-19 in the third quarter of the year. Claims over and above the long-term expected level were 3.42 billion rand, net of reinsurance and net of annuity and disability offsets within Sanlam Life and Savings, and 536 million within Sanlam Emerging Markets. As part of a package of basis changes, Sanlam Life and Savings has released discretionary reserves of 2.85 billion to mitigate the impact of excess claims. Sanlam Emerging Markets holds more limited discretionary reserves, and we will only consider releases in this regard at year-end based on full-year experience. We have taken very significant actions to mitigate the future impacts of COVID on the group's business. These include extensive repricing of group risk business, development of new underwriting standards, and amended product design in our retail businesses, accompanied by a full review of actuarial valuation assumptions in the light of the pandemic. The latter will permit us to restore pandemic buffers over the next number of years from higher margins. The net result from financial services increased by 24% on 2020 and was 4% higher than 2019, excluding one-off items. But it's extremely important to note that both 2020 and 2021 years contain quite a lot of very lumpy and unusual quarterly movements. So the current level of growth is therefore not expected to be maintained for the full year. We are, however, delighted that the current year profits are in line with 2019 results, since we were targeting to restore profitability to 2019 levels as quickly as possible. Overall, persistency trends remained excellent. The group remains well capitalized, with Sanlam Group Solvency Capital Requirement Cover Ratio at 176% on the 30th of September. Just maybe to point out that we do our valuations quarterly, although we now are reporting a 10-month period, and that's why we're quoting the solvency as at the end of September. Our solvency ratio is well within the target range set by the company. Our operating performance for the 10 months to October reflects the strength of the underlying operations and the ability to maintain value creation for our shareholders in very challenging times. In conclusion, I'd like to say that we continue to actively manage the consequences of the COVID-19 pandemic and the emergence of the fourth wave in South Africa. The group expects to retain modest discretionary reserves to mitigate any mortality losses after the end of the current financial year. The group has, however, as I mentioned just now, implemented far-ranging management actions to deal with the future impacts of the pandemic on mortality experience. On our best estimate assumptions, we believe that these management actions should eliminate future mortality losses. However, as I'm sure you'll appreciate, a large degree of uncertainty still exists with respect to future COVID-19 impacts. In addition to the management actions taken, the group will therefore maintain a higher level of discretionary capital than is normal for a period of time, and this period may indeed extend to several years. In order to provide a buffer, should the management actions taken prove to be inadequate in dealing with the financial consequences of the pandemic? Over the medium to long term, we remain extremely confident of the growth prospects of all of the group's businesses. Furthermore, we are very confident about the strong ongoing cash generation ability of our businesses, and we expect that we'll be able to continue to deliver value to our shareholders and to other stakeholders. I will now open the call to questions, so please let us have your questions as you're ready.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one on your touchtone phone or on the keypad on your screen. You will hear a confirmation tone that you have joined the queue. If you wish to withdraw your question, please press star and then two. The first question is from Warwick Bam of Avior Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, Paul and the rest of the team. Thank you very much for the comments and the time. Start with three questions. Just the first one, in terms of the trend in new business volume growth, it seems to have continued in a similar manner to the first 6 months in the third quarter. Just can you expand on whether the performance is similar to the first half if you drill down to a product level and distribution channel perspective? Any kind of color around those trends would be valuable. Second question is just on, is 2021 new business volumes as a high base? Can you give us a sense of the chances of agents improving their productivity as to kind of where productivity stands? Certainly in the investment and savings segment of the business, that's benefited from the pandemic, but potentially you can add some color around the risk products and whether there is still capacity to improve sales volumes in 2022. And then third question on the Indian Shriram General Insurance business. There's currently a freeze on the third-party premium increases. Is there any clarity on when that freeze will lift and what percentage of the book does that third-party freeze affect? Thanks.
Warwick, thanks very much. I'm going to give you a high-level answer to the first question and see then whether Abigail or Grant or maybe even Lots can shed any more detail on it. I'll then deal with your second question, and I'm not sure whether we have an answer to the third question at hand. But let me start with new business volume growth. I mean, as you say, it has continued during this six-month period. And I think I've been quite consistent in warning that at some point, as the economy goes back to normal in inverted commas, we would expect to see that coming off. So I will see whether there are any detailed comments from my team, because you asked for a bit of color along different product lines. When I look at a high level at the different product lines, and the different market segments, they've actually all been, you know, really high. So Sanlam Corporate has done very well. Our retail mass business has grown extremely strongly. The investment business, as you pointed out, has grown pretty strongly. The one that's been a bit of a laggard in terms of growth has actually been the risk product sales in the affluent market. But I'll see whether the team want to add anything to that. As far as 2021 being a high base, I think 2021 is an incredibly high base now. So when we look forward, we definitely don't anticipate seeing the same level of growth that we've seen in this year. You asked specifically about agent productivity. We know that in our retail mass business, we believe that we can in fact lift the productivity, and we've got very granular plans around doing that. There's a tremendous difference in the productivity of very experienced agents and those with less experience, and so it's a question of making sure that we nurture and keep people so that they gain experience, and that tends to drive up productivity. But we've got a number of measures in that place, in that space. But I do take the general point that the base is high. I think it's important to point out that in the long run, of course, growth is really important to us. In the short run, you've got the strange effect that, in fact, slightly lower rate of growth can be helpful from a profit point of view, but not as helpful from a return on group equity point of view. On the Indian GI business, I mean, it's quite interesting. You know, the life business in India grew 60%, and yet the overall business grew 3%, which I guess will give you a sense of what happened to the GI. But I don't know whether anyone on this call, I don't know, Grant, whether you or Abigail or Lots know exactly what proportion that that particular product line, which has its premium set by the government, is of the total GI book. So, colleagues, does anybody want to come in and add, or are we just going to leave Warwick with my answers?
Warwick, it's Grant. Maybe I can just add on the new business trends. It has generally been quite stable, quite good across all lines. The one area in SEM where that was a bit weaker was the asset management business, but as we know, there is a high base there from last year, and that business does tend to be a bit lumpy. But excluding that, all the trends generally across the business have been very strong.
Yeah, that's a good point. I actually missed that, Grant. And Grant, do you know the split in the GI business of the that business that's regulated premium-wise or not? I don't expect you to know the answer, but if you do, it's a bonus.
Yeah, it is the biggest part of the book, Paul. I can get the exact number, but it is.
Yeah, maybe you can touch base with Warwick offline.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Michael Christelis of UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Michael, perfectly. Yeah. Nice to hear you.
Great. Good. Great to hear you. We hear you too, Paul. Thanks for the time and for your team. Three questions, if I can. So the first one, just around corporate, maybe if you can give a little bit more color as to what's growing so well. I mean, it does seem like a market where all your competitors seem to be struggling. So, I mean, can you maybe just comment on sort of the trends over the last 4 months around whether it's risk business, is it umbrella business, is it sort of lengthy annuity business? You know, maybe just some sort of guidance there would be great. Mm-hmm. Then a little bit more technically, I guess, around your discretionary margin. So there's a comment in the pack that talks about repricing and basis changes will largely offset your best estimate of excess claims experience for the full year in South Africa. Now, if I look at your numbers that you've shown us today, it looks like there's about a 600 million shortfall between your discretionary reserve release and your excess claims. Does that mean there's 600 million of additional reserve releases coming, which should bolster the run rate of earnings from where we are currently?
No. Let me help you with that one, Michael, straight away. Of course, now I've forgotten that. You always fluster me when you say something's going to be technical. I think one of the problems with COVID that's been particularly vexatious, I think, from making things easy and understandable is that it doesn't happen uniformly. So we're obviously through. So you said premium rates, as you'll understand, for a full year, and you pitch that to deal with claims over the full year. But the pandemic comes in waves, so we've clearly had the third wave. You would expect that the claims in November and December would be much lighter. And in fact, I mean, that's what we're seeing. And you would know that from the population numbers. Our numbers internally and our patterns internally follow the population statistics. So you're going to have a better experience of death claims in the last couple of months. And then the other point is that because you're putting through pricing changes as schemes come up for renewal, you've got a bigger base of higher premiums for the last couple of months. So the answer doesn't lie in the expectation of further reserve releases, but rather the action and the interaction between the expected claims and the pricing. I know lots you may want to help a bit more with that. Michael, I must apologize. I've forgotten your first question. Actually, your first question was about different product lines.
Corporate business mix.
Yeah, the thing in corporate business, as you probably know, is it's extremely lumpy. So again, it's probably not a good thing ever to look at short-term trends. It's something I think that you do need to, even internally, we always tease Kanisa, but the fact is you can only look at it over the longer term. But look, we've had good wins in every product line. Is doing well. I mean, I actually wouldn't have minded actually giving up a bit of market share, obviously, in the group risk space. But even there, we've had good performance. But there's been just very good, strong, actually, investment flows coming in, as well as risk flows, annuity flows. So really across the board.
Great.
You probably had a third or fourth question, and I apologize, I cut you off.
No problem at all. I did have one more, and that's just on the SEM side, where, again, if I read the comment, it talks about discretionary reserves that will consider releases at end of year. I mean, does that imply then that the $536 million you quote as your excess debts there or excess claims there could be lower for the full year if you do release some of those?
Yeah, it could be a little bit lower, but if you read the whole thing, we have indicated that our margins are modest in that space. We don't have the history of buffers that have been built up over time, so don't count too much good news.
I appreciate that.
Lots, I just wanted to ask whether you wanted to add, you can probably explain the thing better than me. Maybe I even gave the wrong answer. Can you just confirm I gave the right answer to Michael on the margins versus the position at the end of the year?
Yes, Paul, I can confirm that was the correct answer.
Okay, thanks.
Great, thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Thank you. The next question is from Francois Detoy of Anchor Stockbrokers. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for the chance to ask some questions. Just the first one, most of my questions have been asked. I've got one quick one here on the retail mass and then another one. Retail mass volumes up 63% off, and that's an acceleration from the half year, and obviously the post-COVID base period was a bit stronger as well. So where is that acceleration coming from? How much of that is from the Capitec partnership? If you can maybe give a bit of color to that for us, please. Another question of interest to me, you mentioned that you plan to strengthen your mortality bases, mostly to provide for future pandemics, and that could have an impact on new business value. Can you maybe give us a sense of what the margins currently is in BrightRock for a typical affluent market protection policy and how is that likely to change with the immortality base strengthening? Just those two questions, please.
Okay. So I'll try the first one. When I looked down into the detail of this, and to be honest, it was a few weeks ago, but from memory, and so Grant, if you were Abigail, you're younger than me, your memory is probably much better, but there is not a lot of difference between the performance coming out of our more traditional retail mass business and distribution and theirs out of Capitec. In fact, it's kind of neck and neck. So I guess the pickup is probably because as things have eased and the more traditional channels have adjusted, they've been able to get back, whereas Capitec's had probably steady performance throughout. On your question on margins and mortality basis changes, Lots, please, you're going to have to come to the rescue here, but I don't believe we'll be making any changes at BrightRock. So what we were referring to applies to the Sanlam balance sheet and business, not to our investment in BrightRock. And I'm not sure that we disclosed the margins. We can maybe take that offline. But Lots, if you are able to answer it better than me, please have a go.
Yes, thanks, Paul. I think the question in terms of what the impact of the basis changes will be making will be on VNB and VNB margin. As we indicated in the operational update, the basis changes won't have a material impact on VNB and VNB margins. So that's one of the basis changes that we're making in strengthening our mortality basis. So those will carry through and don't have an impact on VNB or VNB margins. Then the second question around what is the typical margin for BrightRock. BrightRock is mainly a risk business, and its margins will be in line with the overall margins that you would see for a retail affluent risk business. Thank you, Paul.
But I mean, I think I'm right in saying, you know, we've got no plans to strengthen that mortality basis because that's, you know, for that board of that company to deal with.
That is correct, Paul.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thanks. Guys, maybe just one more quick question on the claims, excess claims. You mentioned 3.4 billion rands of excess claims in Sanlam Life and Savings. That corresponding number at half year was 1.4 billion rands, if I'm not mistaken. So an additional 2 billion rands in the last 4 months. Very meaningful increase. And how much of that would you say was in the first quarter up to 30 September, and how much came in after that? Because you gave us some guidance at your results presentation in September, which suggested that you'd only, we were probably past the peak of the wave already then, and I think your guidance was somewhere between 1.2 and 1.5 billion rands.
Yeah, I think that's right. So it has definitely been well above the top end of what we anticipated. I don't think we should get down into which month things occurred in, unless Lots, you more on top of it than I am.
Yeah, so Paul, I think what we at our investor day, we did indicate to the market that the experience that we were seeing from the third wave was far worse than the initial indication that we were provided. And yeah. So we did say there was downside risk to the experience that we're observing. And what we are releasing now in our 10-month operational update is consistent with that downside risk that we had indicated was materializing.
That's fine, thanks. I'm trying to get a sense of whether things are beginning to normalize. In other words, was it very much concentrated during the peak of the wave and getting back to
the third wave was very long. If you want a good website always to have a look at, go to Worldometers. They graph it fantastically well, and you'll see that the third wave was a very extended wave with almost a double peak. The first two waves were beautiful and symmetrical, like an artist drew them. The next one wasn't, and there are a lot of theories as to why, but I'm pretty sure that the civil unrest and so on probably had a factor to play in that.
Thank you. And just in terms of beginning to see things normalize, do you care to elaborate maybe?
Well, I think that from the question that Michael asked and the position between October and the end of the year, I suppose it all depends on what you mean by normalized, but COVID claims have, and again, you can look at the population statistics, have fallen right off, and one hopes and prays that that continues through to the end of the year.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. The next question is from Larissa van der Venter of Barclays. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Hey, Larissa.
How are you, Paul?
Good, you?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent.
At the risk of sounding genuinely stupid, and I apologize if I am, from an ISRF perspective on these claims, we had excess claims of 3.4. We are releasing discretionary reserves of 2.8. Does that mean that we have an IFRS loss of 0.6 billion, or are these EV metrics rather than IFRS metrics?
Okay. Lots or Abigail, do you want to help answer that question?
Hi, Paul. So I can help answer that question. So the SS claims that we are quoting, those figures are all if it's earning fees. And these are figures for the 10 months up to 31 October 2021. So we had an IFRS SS claims net of tax reinsurance and offsets of 3.4 billion. And we've released discretionary margins of 2.85 billion. And that's where you get to the figure of the 600 million that you are referring to. When we look at the remainder of the year, we then have to look at what are going to be the excess claims that we're going to be having for the remainder of the year, taking into account the risk mitigation actions that have been taken that Paul referred to. So looking at that number and what we expect to be excess claims for the remainder of the year, we expect experience to be positive given the actions that have been taken. And so that risk pricing outcome plus the reserve releases will offset the overall excess risk claims experience for the year when you look at 2021 in its entirety. So if you look at the excess claims that 1 October and you look at the reserve releases, you do see that gap, the 600 million, but you must look at it with the remainder of the 2 months for the year, taking into account what will be the outcome of the risk mitigation action that will be taken. So we expect that position net for the end of the year will be zero, and that's what we've indicated in the operational update.
Okay. But Lots, when we look at net result from financial services being up 24% year on year to the 10 months ended October, does that include the 600 million loss that you referred to?
Yeah.
Okay.
Remember, Larissa, that last year Suntum had a massive hit in quarter three. And that's so your question, by the way, wasn't stupid at all. It comes back a little bit to the question that Michael asked and this point that we're making that we've got 20 and 21 do not have four smooth quarters, and therefore, you've got to be very careful in, you know, when you look at sort of growth or whatever relative to prior year. And so that's why we've tried to provide some guidance for you to think through to it on a full year basis.
Okay, thank you. You've actually answered two of my three questions with that, so thank you for the detail. The last one is related on future COVID waves. You spoke a lot about vaccine hesitancy when you did the half-year results, but there's no mention of it in this trading update. Is that a lesser issue, or are you simply expecting future waves to have a lower impact on mortality? Or how should we think about the future on this and where Sanlam's reserves stand?
Okay, so what I will say to you is what I've been saying pretty consistently is I don't believe anyone who tells you that they're able to predict the future of COVID. I mean, we obviously do try to model, but I think it is extremely difficult. And you have something like a new variant comes along. I'm sure you're following it very closely, and you know that we do not know whether it's dangerous or not. We don't know whether it's going to be severe amongst people who haven't been vaccinated. What we do know at this point is what vaccination rates, sit at in the country. So we monitor that very closely. What I will say is that, and I think we've, in the sort of fuller document, we have actually outlined that I do believe that by the end of February, we will have a few things. We'll have a much better idea of what this, what this wave is doing. And I think it will be quite critical. Lots is actually, busy doing the modeling. But the modeling is obviously always only as good as the assumptions and therefore the data. Truthfully, and we do expect to still see a higher level of deaths into next year. Despite vaccinations, and the pricing changes that we've put through are obviously designed to deal, and the underwriting changes are designed to do with that. And then it's going to depend on how for how long does that sustain, and when does it start tailing off. So we still are going to see higher deaths, I believe, for quite some time. But we don't know the extent of it.
And that is currently in the modelling, is that correct?
It is
already
in
the assumptions.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Akona Machoba of MoneyWeb. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. My question relates to... sorry, can you hear me?
Perfectly, you're going to go ahead.
My question relates to the premium charges that Sanlam will be charging unvaccinated new life insurance clients. What position will you be taking there? Will those unvaccinated clients expect higher premiums? And if so, when should this policy start coming into effect?
Yeah, so... We are not taking a view that, we're going to divide you like smokers and non-smokers into two categories with different premium rates. What we know about vaccination is that it's actually more important for people with comorbidities and at older ages. So we're taking very much a risk-based approach to this thing. It's not to say that COVID won't kill you if you are unvaccinated at age 25, but the probabilities of it are much lower than for an older person with comorbidities. So we are pricing at quite a granular level, and it isn't as simple you're vaccinated or you're not vaccinated.
Thank you. The next question is from Kevin Harding of Investec. Please go ahead.
Hi, Paul and team. Thanks for the time. Just one question from myself. Perhaps you're able to comment on whether you know the vaccination status of across your various policyholder books and whether you've seen that sort of the vaccination rates improve from the half year, or if that's just very much an unknown at this stage, that data point. Thank you.
Yeah, Kevin. So thanks. Nice to hear from you. Look, the fact is we don't know in detail because obviously we don't have access to the data that would enable that. But we do have estimates, and I think it's fair to say that, you know, the insured population is more heavily vaccinated, but different segments. You know, there isn't just one insured population in inverted commas. I think if you look at this trading update and you just look at the extent of the excess claims coming out of the group risk book, you know, that, and you compare that to the losses coming out of our affluent book or our retail mass, you know, that will tell you, you know, that those few numbers paint the, you know, a real picture that this thing is not, is by no means evenly distributed. So our view and our modeling is based on the fact that yes, vaccination rates have increased, but clearly vaccination rates are nowhere near yet where they need to be. I think we all know that. We as a country need to push hard to get these things, you know, these rates up higher.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you. The next question is from Volley van der Walt of Abax Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for the call. You intend to beef up the discretionary capital of the group. Does that have any implication on the dividend expectation going forward? Should we expect dividends to perhaps grow at a lower rate than cash earnings for the next year or two? Or would it come mainly out of the sales out of the UK and the like?
Yeah, so it's great to hear from you. So it's a great question. The simple answer is what we're trying to do is to fill up our discretionary capital bucket with the proceeds of sales, and then continue to grow our profits. And as you know, our policy is to distribute cash, and pretty much profits is not far off cash in the Sanlam Group. So our expectation is for dividends to be, you know, to be, you know, to grow in line with profits going forward. But to the extent that we have worse mortality experience than is built into the pricing and the underwriting, we've got a discretionary reserve that can be, or a discretionary capital that can be used, you know, to plug those gaps. So that's really the answer. And I guess if our, you know, your next question in anticipation will be, well, you know, if your pricing assumptions and so on are borne out, you know, what will you do? Well, then we will have to release the discretionary capital back to shareholders. You know, and I think you're pretty well aware of the waterfall that we go through to do that, either just special dividends or share buybacks.
Excellent. Thank you. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. The next question is a follow-up from Warwick Bam. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just 201, just trying to, can you just explain the nature and materiality of the derivative losses from the hedging instrument that you have in the triple BEE special purpose vehicle? It reduced the headline earnings growth number. I think at the half year, there was only commentary around a reversal of an impairment.
That's a great question, Warwick, because if you get a nice simple answer now, then I'll understand it as well. Abigail, you're the expert on that.
Thanks, Paul. I just want to make sure I got the question right. You were asking about the DSPV and the impairment reversal that we marked or that we reversed in the interim?
No, the question actually revolves around, I guess, the current operating update, specifically the headline earnings number. It mentions hedging losses from the special purpose vehicle.
I will double check that. I'll get back to you. The ones that I'm aware of from the SPV would be only as relates to the some of the underlying loans that we have with Standard Bank on the entities, on the SPV entity. So it would be that.
Thanks. And maybe just one more confirmation, Paul, just to double check your potential basis changes on the embedded value at year end.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we should expect beyond mortality?
We all do a full review. We've basically done the mortality one. Lots and his team are still finalizing, but I wouldn't expect a huge amount more. I think we did draw attention to the continuing good persistency, and so that's clearly an area that we're going to have to have a look at as well. But we don't want to make any commitments in that regard yet.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from Matthew Ponsett of Laurium Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much for the time today, guys. A simple question from me. The 4% growth off of the 2019 base, you say it excludes once-off items. Would that then exclude the sort of 600 million rand mortality loss? Or
No. There were some big releases at the end of 2019, actually, ironically, from the general insurance book in India. There were some others, but you now are forcing me to dredge up
no worries.
My memory bank. But that is the one that I recall that stands out. There was a big cleanup of the reserve. I think we've explained to you guys.
No, sure, sure.
Yeah, and there was a big cleanup in 2019. So there was a big one-off release at the end of 2019 off the back of that. I know there were some other items which Grant or Lots or Abigail probably will be able to mention.
Okay, so effectively you're 4% ahead of the 2019 basis plus 600 million if we were to look through the COVID impact.
Yeah.
And then going forward, with the sort of mortality strengthening at year end and the repricing, effectively, again, under your current base assumptions, COVID shouldn't have an earnings impact going forward. Have I got that?
Yeah, it shouldn't. But just again, and I know you're going to say I've told you this, but of course that is all subject to us being right about the assumptions, and that's a big if. And hence the need for a bigger discretionary capital buffer.
Excellent. Thank you, guys.
My pleasure, Matthew.
Thank you. The last question is from Serene Barnard of 91. Please go ahead.
Serene, I wondered what happened to you.
I pressed the button too late. Are you well?
Wonderful. Nice to hear that you're well there. Fire away at us. We'll try and help you.
Right. Also, a follow-up on the base effects of 2019. So you point out that we shouldn't extrapolate the 2021 over 2020 growth rate. So if we compare the normalized plus four to the 2019 base, is there anything else that's funny in the last 2 months of 2019 that we should bear in mind in thinking about the run rate?
Abigail, Lots, Grant, I can't think of anything.
Neither can I, Paul. I can't think of anything that would normalize.
Okay, great. So it's probably better to reference versus 2019 than to try and reference versus 2020 because of all the funnies.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I mean, it depends on how important it is for you to forecast the earnings to the end of the year. What we didn't want you to do was just take 2020 and multiply by 24.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, because that would
Fair enough. Okay.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to ask, so on the rebuild of the pandemic reserve, so that's clearly going to have an impact, as you point out, on the embedded value. So when we think about the order of magnitude in terms of what you want to reestablish, is it fair to think the previous pandemic reserve was about 760, but clearly it wasn't sufficient? So to think of the previous pandemic reserve plus some?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, this is obviously quite a detailed question, and I think it's something that we will deal with quite possibly better at the year end. But where our thinking is that the kind of margin that we've had historically coming out of our mortality, we should think about, you know, having twice the size, but instead of releasing it into profits, actually keeping half of it and building up a, you know, a buffer, which I guess is a little bit, you know, hoping that the seven good years come before the years of famine. And that's obviously the problem with pandemics, is they come very erratically. But that's kind of the thinking that we're taking on board.
Okay, great.
And there's not a lot of good thinking globally on this, actually. It's quite difficult to work out, but it seems if you talk to some of the big global reinsurers that's not a million miles away from where they think the thing should be. The whole world is probably underpriced for pandemics.
But so if you provide for that pandemic reserve, can we then go back to a situation where Sanlam produce consistent positive mortality experience over time?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, great. And maybe then just a last question. You talked about the excess mortality claims in South Africa. What are you seeing in Africa in terms of the trend?
Okay, so a lot later that it's arrived. It's very patchy. And it has undoubtedly, you know, as we've said, led to R500 million of losses, which is quite a lot, because the businesses, obviously, these are all small businesses that are still growing and building up. So it's significant. I think it gets lost a bit in everybody focusing on the situation in SA. My own view is that you're not going to see vaccination programs of any consistency or scale across our other markets. So in a sense, we're just going to have to live with permanently higher, you know, mortality, and hence why we've repriced in those markets. Now, the only sort of good thing about that is that those markets are much easier to reprice in than in South Africa, because the competitors are, there just isn't the same competitive pressures.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. Very clear.
Thank you. So we do have another follow-up question from Francois Barnard. Please go ahead.
Hi, it's Francois here. Just quickly on related to Serene's last question there, also on the competitive environment in South Africa. I mean, it does look like certainly in the group risk space, you're getting new business, and I think your commentary suggests you've hiked your prices sufficiently to cover what you expect from COVID next year. So it does look like the competitive environment is such that you can meaningfully increase group risk prices. So one, can you maybe just elaborate or confirm that? And then just a related question: in the current environment with interest rates that's going up and long bond yields that's fairly steep and pricing in quite a bit of risk, where are there opportunities? Are you seeing the pricing for annuity business and risk business change favorably, and are there new business opportunities in the back of that?
Yeah, okay. So, Francois, Sure. Sorry, I was thinking about your second question, so I forgot the first question you had. Oh, you asked about whether it's possible to reprice in the group risk market. Look, the group risk market is extremely competitive, and as you know, schemes are come up and can be rebroked every year. We've obviously pushed through pricing that we think is fair. I guess whilst it's competitive, you know, if you think of the scale of the losses that we've reported in that line of business, you have to assume, and we know what our competitors' totals, we don't know what the split is, but I would suggest that their experience is at least as bad as ours, if not worse. And so while there may be a temptation to price very keenly, I suppose at some point you run out of money. So anyone who wants to be reckless and irresponsible can certainly gain market share. The question is how deep are your pockets? And actually, it's a very stupid strategy because at some point, prices will come back down and they will just lose that business to people who haven't made all the losses. So I think that, you know, the repricing on an annual basis of that business and the fact that it can move means that people can't be too stupid about their pricing. Doesn't mean they're not, but they shouldn't be. And so I think, you know, net-net, I think we've been able to put through, you know, the increases. I wouldn't say we haven't lost any clients, but we certainly, you know, it hasn't been a major problem. Your second question was about, you know, do higher yields open up opportunities? I think on the annuity front, you know, of course, people only take an annuity when they retire. So I guess to some degree, the pool of opportunity is driven by life events rather than by bond yields. I think what is true is that there's been a big switch to the more guaranteed annuity and away from the kind of unit linked annuity, as people have actually understood the value of locking in a guarantee. So I guess you'll see a bit of that switch, but I wouldn't imagine that it will affect the total, you know, the total volumes of annuities sold. It might just affect the mix of what gets sold.
Excellent, thank you. And then how does that mix compare? Guaranteed annuity more profitable to you, higher margins than life annuities?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, Grant, do you know the answer to that question? I mean, you put up more capital, of course, but Lots, do you know the answer to that?
So I think the guaranteed annuities, we are deploying our balance sheet and putting up capital. So from a margin perspective, they have got a higher margin for us compared to the investment-linked living annuity type product. So the guaranteed annuities are higher margins for us.
Yeah. But return on capital, of course, is may be good, but on a pure index-linked annuity, it's infinite or close to infinite.
That is correct, Paul. So when you look at it from a return on capital perspective, they are both very pleasing products for us. No.
Thanks.
Thank you. So we have no further questions in the queue. Do you have any closing comments?
No, I just, firstly, Chris, thank you very much for being a good host. And to thank everybody who called in and for all the people who asked questions, thank you for your time. And we wish you all a very wonderful holiday. I'm sure everybody needs it. So have a break and please stay safe and enjoy time with your families. And thanks very much for all of your support for us at Sanlam.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that then concludes this event and you may now disconnect.